Welcome to Tal Prince Live, your Pharisee-free zone, where no topic is off limits and no sin beyond grace. Now your host, Tal Prince.
Well, good evening, North America. I can't tell you how happy we are to be with you. It is Sunday night, 9 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, 6 o'clock on the West Coast, and we are so glad to have you here in the Pharisee Free Zone. I can't tell you enough that there is no topic off limits. There is no sin beyond grace here. You can call here with anything and know that you are safe. This is a very safe place. So if you've ever wondered what real grace is like, I'm telling you, you can experience it here at Tal Prince Live. We love to help folks and deal with you and just be as encouraging as we can to you, to let you know there is nothing that can ever separate you from the love of God. Nothing can ever separate you. I am one who struggled with pornography and sexual addiction for 24 years of my life because I was so scared to death to think, I can't tell anybody. I can't let anybody know this. If I do, they're going to freak out. They're going to throw me out. They're not going to know what to do with me. And I was so scared and so terrified. But when I finally came out of those shadows and let people know and I got help, I'm telling you, I grew up in church. I was in church since I was a fetus, I'm telling you. But I never really understood the gospel until I came out and experienced it for myself. And that way, when I dropped the mask, dropped the defenses, and let people know that I'm not perfect, I've got a problem. Too often in this world, those of us who've been around the church the whole time, we walk around and we put our masks on and we want everybody to think that God saved us because he's got good taste. And I'm telling you, it's not true for anybody. Don't care who you are. You're broken and you need a Savior. And God didn't save you because he made a good decision with you. Okay? He saved you because he made you in his image and he's absolutely in love with you. And he wants relationship with you. And that's why he put his son on the cross to die for you. And that's why he sends his Holy Spirit to live inside of you, to be with you right here, right now. It's a radical concept, a fascinating concept, and one that is very, very beautiful. And we love to talk about it here at Tal Prince Live. Our phone number tonight is 1-800-528-HOPE. It's the same number. It always is 1-800-528-HOPE. And our email, you can email us at hope@talprincelive.com. Let me ask you a question. Have you heard about the shack yet? If you have not, trust me, you will. Okay, we have the author of this book back with us tonight. We had him just a couple of weeks ago with Drew Marshall, and we only got to have him for a few minutes, and he has graciously agreed to come back on with us tonight, and we are so glad to have him here. This book was published by a couple of friends of his, so it's technically not self-published, but they set up a little publishing company, and they fueled this book with the best marketing blitz that $300 can buy, and they have now sold, in the last 10 months, this book has sold over 750,000 copies. Eugene Peterson says of this book, it has the potential to be for this generation what John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress was for his generation. That is a big statement. And so we are just thrilled to have William Young with us tonight. And I can't wait to get you introduced to him and hear from him. And if you've read the book and have comments or questions, know that we'd be happy to hear from you tonight. You can email again to hope@talprincelive.com, or you can give us a call at 1-800-528-HOPE, and we'll try to work your calls in. And I'm drinking a mug of Big Fish coffee tonight. If you remember last week, we had our guy John Harris on from Big Fish, and I'm telling you, this is great coffee. Go check them out at bigfishcoffee.com, and we're coming to you tonight live from the studios at Southeastern Bible College in Birmingham, Alabama, and you can check them out at www.sebc.edu. When we come back from this break, we are going to have William P. Young with us. We'll be taking your calls and emails as we go, and remember, here at Tal Prince Live, we believe that truth and transparency lead to transformation. That's the gospel of Jesus Christ. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Alright, welcome back to Towel Prince Live. We're so happy to be in the Pharisee Free Zone here with you tonight. Again, no topic off limits, no sin beyond grace. And I don't know about you, but I am really enjoying being with you every Sunday night. And we'd love to hear from you, what you think about the show. You can email us at hope@towelprincelive.com and go check out our website, www.towelprincelive.com, T-A-L. Prince, spelled out as you would expect, like artist formerly known as, alive.com. And we'd love to hear from you there about what you're thinking about the show, what you'd like to see us talk about on the show. And so your opinion matters. We can't do this show without you. Okay, so we really want to know how it's working for you and what you would like us to cover and talk about. And tonight, I can't tell you how thrilled we are to have with us again William P. Young. We're not thrilled to have him because he's the author of one of the fastest selling books on the market right now, and not because he's the author of a tremendously healing book, but because he is one that knows, in his own words, that we are only as sick as the secrets we keep. Isn't that a great statement? We're only as sick as the secrets we keep. He shares our core value here at Towel Prince Live, that we need to lead transparent lives. So we're glad to have with us tonight William Paul Young. Paul, how are you tonight? All right. We're having a bit of a technical issue. Let's try again. Paul, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, there you are. My problem.
Saying that everything that matters is great, and a bunch of the stuff that doesn't matter is pretty good too.
That is fantastic. Hey, you know, we're all learning here at Towel Prince Live and having fun doing so. But we're so glad to have you with us. Thanks for agreeing to come back so soon.
Ah, my pleasure, Tal. I just appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, man. And can I just thank you publicly for your daughter, Amy? What a joy she is to work with.
Thanks. I'll pass that along to her. It's one of the greatest joys to have one of your own kids that starts working with you on projects. And she's becoming my personal assistant, which is just the goofiest thing in the world. But it's
yeah, you never planned on needing one of those, did you?
I've never needed one before.
It's getting that way now, though, isn't it? Good
it,
night.
It is. I'm getting 50 to 100 emails a day, and she's working with some friends back in Nashville to help me organize, you know, some of the invitations that I get and things like that. So it's kind of nuts. But
you're getting a lot of invitations now, aren't you, Paul?
I am getting a lot of invitations. I was telling Nicholas, you know, that he's my 25-year-old. I have six kids, and they range from 27 to almost 15. And I was saying to Nicholas that this whole thing is so surreal because, for those of you who don't know, I wrote the story for my six children with no intent to publish. I've never published anything. I am the accidental author. And it's just a story that I wrote at the encouragement of my wife, Kim, and it just has kind of gotten out of hand. So I was talking to Nicholas because May will be the year, it'll be a year since the book actually came into print when my friends created Windblown Media, the publishing company. And I'm saying to Nicholas, you know, here we are, it's almost a year ago, and a year ago nobody cared what I thought about anything.
Wow.
and I'm as dumb as I was a year ago. And I say, it's kind of like, you know, God says, well, we do need somebody to talk to Balaam. Okay. Well, there's a critter as dumb as it was a year ago.
I thought that was my job, man. I'm glad to know I got some help.
Hey, what did they say? Misery loves company? Or
Yeah, you know, idiots normally band together, I think.
Is that what it is? Fools seldom differ.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Paul, on the back of the book, just in your little bio back there, you have this phrase that I wanted to ask you about.
The wastefulness of grace.
Yeah, tell us what you mean by that, 'cause I love that statement.
The wastefulness of grace. You know, I love cosmology. I like looking at the pictures from the Hubble Space Telescope and thinking about how incredibly immense this universe is, and I like nature and hiking and all those kinds of things, the ocean. I mean, there's pretty much nothing that I don't like as far as the creation. Mm. And you just think about, you know, how many shades of green were necessary, you know?
Mm.
And yet we've got, every time you think you've seen all the shades of green, there's new ones.
Wow.
And it's built right into nature. And there's just the sense of the immensity of the universe, of which 99.999 whatever percent only God has ever seen.
Mm.
And therefore, you know, he must enjoy doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And same with the micro universe, with the subatomic particles and how all these things work. There is just like the wastefulness of creation. Well, you begin to look at what's happened in our lives for a lot of us, and we begin to see that God has not been stingy about his grace. You know, that he has been overabounding and beyond what we could have even thought was possible.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this sense of the wastefulness of grace. It's kind of a play on the prodigal father, you know, the prodigal son and the prodigal father.
Yeah.
Is that there's the sense of the way that he loves his sons is just beyond measure. And he's the prodigal father, the wasteful father.
Huh. That's interesting, man. I like that. I like that. And the shades of green, you know, it's a question, you know, when things go wrong, everybody wants to, you know, blame, you know, put the blame on God for that and say, well, you know, if there's a God, how could he let things like that happen?
Yep.
And we as followers of Christ are so slow to respond to that, but we need to be able to respond with, well, okay, if we need to saddle him with, you know, with the pain in the world, that's great. But then how do you explain pleasure, and how do you explain color, and how do you explain
fun and laughter?
Yeah. And why did he put
joy and all of those things?
Yeah. Why did he make food taste, you know, if he doesn't love us? Why does food have taste? It doesn't have to.
Well, yeah. You know, it's the big philosophical question beyond the issue of why is there anything is we can understand entropy, and we can understand Darwinian evolutionary theory, and we can understand how things are disintegrating.
Speak for yourself. I can't understand any of that, man.
but why is there good? Why is there love? And love's invisible. It's not something you can quantify and put in a test tube.
Yeah.
Why is there friendship? Why is there camaraderie and the joy of a good joke and art and all of these things?
And community.
Why do these things even exist?
Yeah.
I use a statement a lot of times when I'm signing books for folks that I don't know who they are. I'll just put in the book, if anything matters, everything matters, which comes out of the shack. And it's really philosophically just a direct attack against nihilism.
Yeah.
That says that nothing matters. And you know what? So many of us feel like we don't matter.
Right.
And the truth is that if anything matters, then all of a sudden significance and meaning is embedded in everything.
Yeah.
And I love that. It matters how we choose to live. It matters whether we hurt somebody or choose not to, or choose to forgive or extend grace to someone else, or look more deeply into the eyes of the person who is with us and see what's the beauty, or just the surface of the beauty that's in that person, because every person is a universe inside themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of seeing beauty in people, I heard this yesterday because those of you that are listening in Canada may have heard Paul on the Drew Marshall Show again yesterday. And that's a mutual friend that Paul and I share. And on the show, you told the story about how you met your wife, Kim. Could you tell that? Because I absolutely love that.
Well, I was working at a church in Gresham, Oregon, and just outside of Portland. And it was a large church. I was in charge of the college group, which numbered anywhere from 300 to 700, depending on the time of year and what was going on in the area. But so it was a large group. And I was in charge of, you know, what happened on a Friday night, and it was called Encounter, and was the going thing at the time. Well, one night I see Kim come in with two of her sisters, and she has five sisters and two brothers. And so I immediately changed what I was planning to do, and worked it so that we could break up into groups of two to pray with each other. And I was very selective about who I picked. That's how I met Kim, yes.
That is fantastic. Yeah, you and I share the same manipulative tendencies.
Oh, I know. I've been, a long healing process, and I don't tend to do those kinds of things anymore, but they make for good stories. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. I met my wife, Teresa, and, met her at a Falcons game, but, met her with a friend, but, didn't. I just told my brother-in-law, that's the most beautiful woman ever. And he said, she's so out of your league. And I said, yeah, but all she could do is say no. But, that was a big statement but I knew I would never have the guts just to straight up ask her. So she was at work with some friends, and we went to lunch, and she was in the car coming back with me. And I said, hey, I feel like going to see a movie after work. Does anyone else want to go? And it was just she and another girl in the car. And they both said, yeah, sure. And then I got back to the office, and I called the other girl and said, I think you're sounding like you're coming down with something.
Did you really do that?
Oh, yeah. I think you're getting a cold. You really don't need to be out tonight. You probably need to go home and rest. And she wasn't getting it, man. She was just like, what? And no, I feel fine. I'm like, no, I really think you're getting sick. And finally, she, I said, look, you don't want to go to the movie tonight. And she goes, oh, yeah, I'm getting a little sick. I'm like, see, there you go. So that's how I got my wife on our first date and never stopped. So anyway, we're going to come back, and we're going to take questions and calls if you've got them about the shack. But we're going to be talking about this book next with our great friend Paul Young. So stick with us on Tao Prince Live, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 161. Right, welcome back to Tao Prince Live. We're so happy to have you with us tonight, and we've got a great guest. We've got Paul Young, author of The Shack. Want to recommend his website to you. Website is theshackbook.com. Okay, you can go there, get information about the book. Also, a great blog, great site, windrumors.com. Highly recommend that one to you as well. And if you are in the Paducah, Kentucky area, want to say hello to you, and I will be there May 9th and 10th with the Ruth Graham and Friends Festival. Looking forward to that conference with you. We're going to be at the Heartland Worship Center. I'll be there talking about pornography and sex addiction and how you can get free of that stuff, man. You don't have to stay there, whether you are male or female. You don't have to stay. The grace of the Father has covered that. You can come out. You can get help. You don't need to stay. So come on out to the Heartland Worship Center on May 9th and 10th. For information, go to RuthGrahamAndFriends.com. So we're back here with Paul Young, author of The Shack. And Paul, you said that this book was written for your kids. What was the main message you wanted to get across to your children?
Well, Kim wanted me to write the story for about 5 years, and neither of us knew exactly what that meant. And at first, it wasn't even a story. It was just that she wanted me to put in one place kind of the big picture and how I think. Not that my kids don't understand that, but she just would like to have it in one place, because the way that I look at the world and God and everything is a little bit different or out of the box. And so she wanted to put it in.
So that makes you fit in well here.
Thanks. I feel right at home, so not a problem. For me personally, if my kids had been making mistakes and gone sideways or left their love for Jesus or any of those things, then, I would have wanted to do something that would have saved them a lot of years. But they're strong. All of my kids, all six of them, are strong. They love Jesus. They have their own relationship with Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And so that's not the issue. But the other piece that I wanted to do, besides the fact of putting it into a story form, which I think slides past people's barriers, mental barriers and paradigms, art in general, music or nature or theater or art, even paintings and sculpture. It has a way of penetrating past our defenses, mm-hmm. and that's why I like the story. Now, my experience growing up inside the religious community, Christian Protestant religious community, is that a lot of times we got like a piece of the puzzle once a week, and they would describe the piece of puzzle like, you know, it's here it is, it's got a little green on it, a little blue, and if you look over here, maybe this is a piece of a flower, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. And you take your piece of puzzle home, you stick it in the puzzle drawer with all the other pieces, and then next week you go back in another piece. Mm. And I wanted a box top. I wanted something that was expansive enough for my kids that when they got a piece of the puzzle, they could go, okay, here's where that goes. This piece goes in the garden, this piece goes in the cave, this piece goes, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And that was really important to me. And then the last thing that was important to me is I wanted to ask or set a story up in such a way that if I'm not around and my kids have the kind of loss that is so deep and so devastating that the most fundamental questions were raised, then I would like to have left them something that might help them.
Mm.
And so that's kind of what was behind it.
Wow. Well, I think you clearly did that, man. And can I thank you, by the way, for just the picture of a laughing Jesus?
You're very welcome. You know, again, this goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, is that a lot of times we don't think about the fact that being made in the image of God has all those different elements to
right.
it, laughter
yeah.
and playfulness and childlikeness, and all of those things have to be rooted and sourced in the relationship that exists between Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
These things didn't show up because, you know, we messed up the world and, you know, maybe Lucifer came along and invented these things. and our creation being made in the image of God means that all of these elements that are such wonders of relationship have to be sourced in his very nature and character.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it's so great. You know, I love, they're hard to find. There are very few, but I love paintings that have Jesus laughing.
Yeah, I do too.
They're just so moving to me because we, you know, we lose that. We lose sight that Jesus was really, had a body. Was really here and had all the same emotions and same feelings, and you know that he laughed, he had fun, you know, he knew joy, and that's just a great thing, you know. And I've really not set up the book, so let me just do that quickly, and let me encourage you that when you read this book, the first 80 pages or so are going to be a little tough, okay?
They are, yep.
But push through. Push through. You'll be glad you did.
But and they're not graphic.
No.
But they are wrenching.
They are, especially if you're a parent. It's
especially.
I gave the book, by the way, to a friend of mine. I work at a seminary here in Birmingham, Beeson Divinity School, and we have a ethics professor there. And I gave this book to him, Paul, because he had a daughter that was murdered. And I want to tell you, this book just owned him. And he had a really, he said, I told him about it. He says, well, I'm going to take this home and read it. That sounds like that could be helpful and really good. And he says, I'll read it tonight and I'll bring it back to you tomorrow. And he came back the next day and he said, I'm not done with this. This is going to take me longer to read.
Yeah.
And it took him a little bit longer, but he just really it really ministered to him, as it has to so many people.
That's amazing. I got an email from a guy who works with a gal, and he finally gave her a copy of the book, and she was kind of last because there was something he just didn't feel the nudge of the Spirit until quite a ways after he'd pretty much given it to everybody he knew, and
yeah.
And then he pestered her for about a week and said, you know, how are you doing with the book? And she finally said, you know, I can't read but a couple pages, and I have to put it down.
Mm.
And he said, well, obviously he sensed that there was some real pain there. And he said, you know, just let Father in that place.
Yeah.
See what he wants to do. And then he writes and he says, you know, she comes back to my station and she's chewing on a mint and telling me how nauseous she is, and then she drops the bomb, and she says to him, you know, nobody around here knows this, but in 1999, my three-year-old daughter was murdered by my boyfriend, not the father. It was in a campground, and she was wearing a red dress.
Oh, wow.
I know, and for those who have read the book, that makes total sense. But, you know, she said, this book was written just for me.
Mm.
And, you know, why would I have used that color, that detail, or anything like that? I mean, for me, it was part of the story, but but obviously, you know, God knows what he's doing when he does stuff. And this kind of detail that had no intention on my part then becomes significant because it intersects the tapestry that is being woven in another person's life.
Yeah.
And that color just moves from the story into their life, and it has significance. And that kind of creativity is so far beyond us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I love that quote from the friend of Amy's, a young man named Tyson. tell the folks about that.
Oh, see, Tyson's graduating from Oregon State. And
a beaver.
Yeah. I've got a son who's just going to graduate in this next year. Also from Oregon State, and so we've got a lot of beavers in our family at the moment. Tyson says to Amy, after he reads the book, he says, Amy, this book is so far beyond your dad. and that's my favorite quote because it's exactly how I feel. You know, it's like I'm what was that movie where that guy lived inside the bubble and didn't know that he was on television 24
hours? The Truman Show.
The Truman Show, yes.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, I keep thinking that if I look really quick, I'll see the cameras, but it's so surreal.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the book, after those first 80 pages, what happens is you've got a man who, when he was a child growing up, his dad was alcoholic and abusive, but, you know, a very church-going deacon type character, and he actually, you know, is involved in the death of his father. Then you move through that, and he's married, he's got kids, and his youngest is abducted on a camping trip, and they spend the time trying to find her, and the trail leads to a shack where they find her bloody dress.
And there's no evidence that absolutely verifies that she's been murdered. And they don't find the body. And so there's just this sense, was there a possibility that it was, that it was a cover-up, a way to steal the body?
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, you made the assumption that he was responsible for the death of his father. That's never clear in the story.
Wow, that's true.
And so that's one of those ambiguities that is left rather hanging in the story. And people ask me about it. They ask me if he actually did or not, and I tell them I don't know, but, you know, I'll ask him. which gets me in trouble anyway, because so many people, even though they see it as fiction, it's like a parable, and a parable is built on things that are true.
Mm-hmm.
And even what some scholar has said, that a parable is the best kind of lie that describes something that is absolutely true.
Mm.
You know, it's fiction, but it does describe things. It wraps details that we all know about around life in such a way that the truth is able to emerge. Mm. And so that's, you know, that's part of it too.
Well, that is great. We're setting the book up. We've got another 12-minute segment coming. We're going to run to break with a little U2, which Paul is also a fan of, so it's another reason I love you. And we'll be back here on Tao Prince Live, Sirius 161. All right, welcome back to Tao Prince Live. Just a little Wilco for you. You know, if you don't know him, you should. And going out to break, we were with U2, who Paul's a fan of, which is just another of the many reasons I love this man. He has great musical taste. talks about it in the back of the book. I highly suggest you look that up. Just a programming note, next week we're going to have Shelley Lubin back with us. We had her last week, and graciously she has agreed to come back for next week to talk further about her work as a missionary to the American sex industry. And so please tune in next week. Tell your friends, Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific on Sirius Satellite 161, Tal Prince Live. So we're looking forward to having her back with us. And Paul, we were kind of setting up the book here, and so they go, they find the dress in the shack, but they don't know if any, they don't know that she's been murdered. They don't know anything about that. It just indicates. And then 4 years go by, and the main character Mac goes into what's called the Great Sadness. And after all of that, after those 4 years, he gets a note in the mailbox. His wife's name for God when she prays is Papa. And there in the mailbox is a note saying, you know, if you want to talk, you know, I'll be at the shack this weekend. Love, Papa. And
exactly.
And so
it's what that is. And Mac is just, he doesn't know what to do with it. The use of the word Papa in that note indicates that the possibility is that it could be from God. And he's had kind of a warm, cold, hot, cold relationship with God over his lifetime. A lot of it influenced by his relationship with his own dad.
Yeah.
And so he just feels that that's too familiar a term to relate to God with. But, you know, he's happy that Nan has that, and it works for her. And but for that name to show up, it just throws him into a loop, because he doesn't know whether maybe it's the abductor who is, it could be even luring him away from his home and his family. Maybe it's just the sickest kind of joke.
Yeah.
And but why would they use the name Papa? And, you know, so the whole thing, he doesn't know what to do with it, and he's invited back to the place where his loss is centered, his pain is centered.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the shack.
Yeah, and don't we all have one of those?
We do, and some of us have more than one, and some of us, you know, because the uniqueness of who we are has been uniquely damaged.
Right.
The process of coming to healing is unique.
Yes, it is.
Only God's big enough to do that.
And, you know, and this book, Paul, you really, and I said this to you last time you were on, to write what you've written, and this is what my friend the professor said to me, to write the way you do, you must clearly have suffered a great deal in your life. And you know, he said that, and he was convinced. He said to me, he said, this man must have lost a child. A child of his must have been murdered to write like this.
Well, there's two pieces in response to that. One is, we've had losses, and I know the people who have had this kind of loss. Our losses, as far as people in our family, and I mentioned this on Drew's show, is that we had a six-month period where my 18-year-old brother was killed in Burnaby, B.C. Mm. My mother-in-law died suddenly at age 59 of a massive coronary. And in Vernon, B.C., my 5-year-old niece was killed the day after her 5th birthday. And this was all in 6 months. So we know that piece of loss. But the other side, because the story is a metaphor, and I'm writing it for my kids, and my kids are very familiar with my history.
Yeah.
And so, like a gal who's an author and wrote me from Nashville said, you know, she said, I don't know anything about your history, but my sense is that Missy represents something that was murdered in you as a child, probably your innocence. And Mac represents the process of coming to healing, and that's spot on. So you know, the pain of between the losses, especially of Jennifer, my niece, and my brother, and the loss of my own childhood due to primarily sexual abuse and some abandonment issues and you know, some pretty crappy stuff but that loss is what's tied into, you know, into the sense of pain that's there. Mm-hmm. You know, pain is pain, and there comes a point where you can't compare it, one person to another. But you, at some point, you can allow yourself to feel it. And that's when you just scream, and you just scream into the wind.
Yeah.
And that's the pain that, you know, that I'd really tapped from my own history and from the history of those that I care about in order to write that pain into it. You know, we have a family here, as many across this country, unfortunately, who have lost children in the wars that are going on. And when he talked about the loss of his son over in the Middle East, he described this, the section of the book where Mac kind of loses it.
Yeah.
And goes deep into that pain. And he said, of anything he's ever read in his entire life, this said how he felt the best.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, that was such an incredible compliment on the one hand, but also an identification. And I've since spent he makes breakfast every once in a while, and I go hang out at his house every once in a while. and we become friends. So it's it was a bridge between he and I.
Oh, yeah.
This little piece.
Well, it's such a great book on the, you know, on the level of just healing, you know, those that have these issues and pain. You know, I mean, you know, I've talked a little bit with you about, you know, just my own abandonment issues and how that led me into addiction, just kind of abandonment and just kind of this performance based mentality that I got to please, I got to be perfect. And if I'm not, I'm not lovable. You know, just, I've got to perform. And we kind of take that imprint that we have of our earthly fathers and we focus that and place that on our heavenly father. And it's not meant to be that way.
No, and it's not fair, but it's what happens.
It's exactly what happens. In this book, you deal so much with just kind of, you know, with shame, security, and significance, don't you?
A lot. And those are real underlying motivators. And, especially for men in our culture, I think that the issue of significance and value based on performance, I think that goes all the way back to Genesis 3.
Yes, it does.
And, you know, where a father says to the woman, you know, part of the problem here is that you're going to turn from me as a source of identity and security and significance and meaning and all of those things. You're going to turn from me, and you're going to place that demand and expectation on this other relationship. You're going to turn to your to your man and place that on him. And the good news is that at least you're turning to another relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is that he can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, he cannot supply those things
and
was never intended to. But unfortunately, we even have a lot of religious books that say he's supposed to do that and she's supposed to turn to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't happen. And if you've got a shame-based person that you're placing the expectation that they have to supply the things of God to you,
it's not going to go well.
It's not going to go well. And shame usually moves backwards at you in terms of control.
Yeah.
The bad news for the man was that he wouldn't even turn to a relationship. He would turn to the ground and to the works of his hands.
Yeah.
And the word pain, mental anguish, is the same for a woman who brings a child into this world and a man who, in pain, tries to create a sense of worth and identity and value and meaning out of the ground and through the works of his hands.
Mm.
So the turning the man takes is even a step further away, because it's away from not only God, but away from relationship as well. And I think that speaks to the heart of some of the loss that's in the male side of the creation, that they have to work two steps. They have to begin to understand the value of relationship as well as the turning back to the Father.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, the issues of significance and worth and all of those identity issues are absolutely central for us as human beings. When it comes to God, the issue is his character. When it comes to human beings, the issue is our identity.
Yeah.
Who are we?
Yeah, and that shame just keeps you with a false identity, because you fear that my real identity is not likable, not lovable. It's just not even likable.
Well, yeah, and even if you produce, you develop a perfectionism. And I tell you, if performance is so important to you, and you are, say, this happened when I was playing piano. I used to play piano when I was you know, younger. And mm-hmm. when I was 12 or 13, I was 10th grade Royal Conservatory of Music in Ooh. Canada, which is pretty much a teaching level. So
look at you.
But, and I would enter these music festivals, and 3 years in a row, I came in second. And a couple things. One is I would be sick and throwing up for a week afterwards because of all the pressure that I felt.
Yeah.
And the second thing was, if 99 people walked by and said, well, you know, that was unbelievably good.
Yeah.
And one person said, you know, I didn't like that. I thought you missed this and you missed that. It would only take one.
Mm.
And they would define for me, because what they did is they penetrated the veneer of perfection and performance that I had set up as my the way that I wanted people to see me. And they just punched a hole through it down into the shame that underlay my everything that I did.
Mm.
So even the things that I did well and was successful, there was always this sense that, you know, that I was, the only reason it was happening was because I was fooling people or was a good liar.
Yeah, I'm telling you. We have so much in common, my friend.
We do.
It's just so much fun to talk with you. We're going to be back here after this short break for our last few minutes here on Tal Prince Live. We're talking The Shack. Check their website, theshackbook.com. You're listening to Sirius Satellite, Channel 161. All right, welcome back to Tal Prince Live here on Sirius Satellite, Family Net Radio, Channel 161. We're so thankful for the opportunity to be here. And let me thank Nick, our stand-in engineer tonight, doing a great job filling in for Herbie the Wonder Engineer. And Casey's been screening calls tonight and having a good time doing that. I can see him through the window having loads of fun in the room. And our guest tonight has been Paul Young, author of The Shack. Please, please, please go to this website and take a look at this book, theshackbook.com. And also go look at Paul's website. He's got a great blog at windrumors.com. His speaking calendar is there, by the way, so he may be coming to a town near you. Trust me, you want to go hear this man. And it's just been so great to have you with us, Paul. And this book has not been without its controversy, has it?
You know, but the Bible hasn't either. Not to say that it's the Bible, but
that was a nice response.
His own controversy, and again, not saying that it ranks with his stuff at all. But
no.
You know, people bring what they have to it,
right.
It raises the conversations, and that's what's so cool about it. And the other thing was, you know, I gave it as a gift to my children,
right?
And so at that point, it wasn't mine anymore, and not in that sense. And so, you know, if God wants to use it to raise the questions and conversations in somebody's life and it pokes them the wrong way, then, you know, that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have the space to allow that to happen, that people can bring what they've got, and that we still don't make that a basis of whether we're going to remain in relationships of love or not.
Right.
We've had too much history where we take truth, whose name is Jesus, and we take love, which is his very nature, and we split the two as if they're, one's an ideology and one's just an emotion.
Mm.
And you know what? Truth, who is Christ, which means it's fundamentally relational, was never to be absent from love.
Mm. Mm.
So, people, I mean, it's funny. I say there's people out there that know me better than I do. And, you know, I'm some expert on the Black Madonna, whatever that is. And I tell people, I don't even want to know. If you know, don't tell me, because I'd rather not even know. And, you know, people think that I'm a closet Hindu or I'm a universalist and think all roads, no matter, you know, as long as you have sincere belief in whatever you believe, then the atonement doesn't matter. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. But, you know, when somebody gets rubbed the wrong way, or for whatever motives, they feel and they even feel protective of people that listen to them or follow them or whatever, and they feel they need to protect them. You know, I can understand that to a point.
Sure.
It's, it's just sad if it gets personal or people are just they're not willing to have a conversation with regard to it. They just decide what you believe and but you know again
and without reading it. You know, clearly, well, I mean, a lot of the complaints I've seen are from people who hadn't read it.
My favorite critics so far.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy that, and I don't read the Amazon reviews. I don't read the positive ones or the negative ones, but my kids do. And so they found this one negative one that they loved because the guy rants on the shack. He gave it a one star, which is the lowest you can get.
Tim Challis.
He just rants on it. Yeah. And then, you know, at the bottom of a review, people can comment on the review itself. And so the first comment says, brother, thank you for saying this. Great job. Finally, someone has stood up and said the truth about this book. And you look, and the first comment is by the same guy who wrote the review. He didn't even bother to change his identity.
Oh.
He didn't even use an alias or anything.
Oh, that's not good.
We're going, that is, I mean, talk about showing your hand.
Oh,
I mean, that's just silly.
Yeah.
And my favorite criticism of the book is that it can't be true because there's no way that Mac's children or Mac could out-skip stones when they're skipping stones on the lake.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Well, Paul, thanks so much for being with us. We are out of time. I hate that. We'd love to have you back. No, you're welcome here anytime.
Thanks, Tel.
Thank you so
much. I love being with you guys. And, you know, blessings to everyone out there.
Thank you so much. Next week, we got to go. Tal Prince, Sirius Satellite 161.